Listeners, Radio Miraya, this is Meh Gabriel Shedad, and this is an exclusive interview with the Deputy Minister of Agriculture and Food Security in the government of South Sudan, Honorable Lily Albino Akol. Honorable Lily Albino Akol, welcome to Radio Miraya, and this is an exclusive interview, as I said, and this is an interview you are giving to Radio Miraya for the first time. And today we'd like to explore the key developments, programs, and projects in the agricultural sector in the country that is South Sudan. First, let us have a general overview of the agricultural season this year in terms of productivity and prospects.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph, and thank you, Radio Maria, for the opportunity. The agriculture season has started well, so far so good. Luckily, I was able to get outside Juba, move a bit in the fields, see the work for myself, and also interacting with some farmers. So a lot have been going on across South Sudan, and even in some parts, farmers admitted that for the first time they are cultivating more. However, the challenges that we see now with the farming season are climate change related. You know, the rain patterns are changing. In some places, the rains delayed and this affected crops. And in some places now, we have seen signs of floods coming. And it's again another fear and apprehensions for the farmers that it may affect the general outcome. But these issues, as I'm talking about them, having them, if they don't persist, we are hopeful that at least the production this year may be better than last year.
Generally, you are talking about farming that is traditional. It is mm-hmm. mostly depending on the rain.
Yes, it's rain-fed.
Mechanized farming is still very limited.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is because most of our farming is subsistence farming, most of our generally. The large scale and commercial farms are not a lot. We only have one farm now in Eastern Equatoria, Igeli Farm. But again, it's even medium. It's not large scale. And most of our farmers depend on the rain. We are yet to develop irrigation and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Mechanization is also a challenge, not yet fully introduced.
And in the course of last year, you visited key agricultural areas. Mm-hmm. And what promising projects the ministry has been implementing so far?
So far, we are working together, as part of World Bank and Africa Development Bank, we have projects that we are doing together with FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN. Let me start with Africa Development Bank. Africa Development Bank is currently funding two projects in South Sudan. One of it is all of them. Revolve around resilience and climate change building. So the first project is Brefonds. It has been going on in several places in South Sudan. And the second one is CRAFT, that's Climate Resilient Agri-Food Transformation. And they look at training farmers in best practices, and also developing some crops for production in South Sudan, mainly rice and sorghum development. With Brefonds and CRAFT, most of it has also gone to the rehabilitation of the Awi Rice Scheme. And as you know, Awi Rice Scheme is one of the national projects that we have in this country, including the Rangdura Scheme in Upper Nile. So far, the first focus has been put on rehabilitating the scheme, and under the African bank funds that were negotiated with the government of South Sudan through the Ministry of Finance, we were able to get about $4 million US dollars for the phase one, the rehabilitation of the scheme. And so far, four basins have been rehabilitated, basin 7, 8, 9, and basin 15. We are also able to rehabilitate some boreholes for drinking and for irrigation purposes during dry season, especially vegetables irrigation. We were able to build a seed store, a weather station, state-of-the-art weather station, and a research center. And some assets here and there for mobility. And this has gone very well. And we had a joint visit recently together with FAW, because FAW is the main implementer, to Northern Bahra Ghazal State, where we assessed the implementation of these projects and also be able to inaugurate these facilities and assets for use. So the second part of the development, again under African Development Bank, is under CRAFT. And as I said, it will have a lot of training and development in the area of sorghum production as well as rice. Again, rice scheme will benefit from it. About 11 million will go to the rehabilitation of the scheme. And this time, the focus will be on rehabilitating the irrigation infrastructure. Hopefully, because this is a very big challenge that has been hindering the development within the scheme. So hopefully with that, we will be able, bit by bit, to have the scheme, if not back to the old days, but even better in terms of production.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Historically, the scheme has been affected and derelicted.
Yes. Yes.
Or neglected or even damaged in many ways because of the war.
Because of
and
the war.
Also because of the decision between the old Sudan and the new
yes,
Sudan.
That is true.
And of course, climate change. Mm-hmm. Now, how much of the scheme has been rehabilitated so far?
So far, we were able to rehabilitate 4 basins, as I say.
Mm-hmm. Out of 11.
Out of 15 basins.
Out of 15.
The scheme
itself.
That is
1/3 now.
Yes, it's limited. The scheme itself is about 11,000 fadans.
Wow.
It's a large land.
Wow.
And this land is divided into basins. So we have about 15 basins. So far, out of these 15 basins, we were able to rehabilitate 4. And the major infrastructure that took place within the scheme is a 26-kilometer road. That is great. And what it is able to do is that it has encouraged other farmers to come in. So now, basin 11, for example, was not part of the basins that was rehabilitated, but some farmers were able to go there and they were able to cultivate, because now we have the road and also we have the boreholes for drinking water.
Minister Lily Albino, interestingly, in development studies, we have learned that when people stop practicing their skills, they tend to lose them.
Yes.
They say even 7 years is enough for you to become totally uninterested in
yes.
that skill.
Yes. Eh?
And you find other things. For the rehabilitation and reviving the scheme, how enthusiastic were the farmers to get back into business?
You know, there's something interesting about these schemes, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, a wood rice scheme and rung. These schemes have been functional. Yes, crippled, but they were functional. They were partially functional.
There's very minimum output.
Very minimum. So farmers were still there. Farmers were still producing, but the output was, of course, very minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And some years back, I think about 8 or 7 years back, there were attempts by GIZ to rehabilitate.
I remember that.
To rehabilitate the scheme, and so there has been activities, but now farmers are very eager and enthusiastic to go back to the scheme, because the scheme in the past has changed their lives and livelihoods. And so they see prospects in doing that. So there's
and
a lot
they
of...
They hope now they can make money.
They hope they can make money, yes.
When is the agricultural season ending in that scheme?
Now they are now doing weeding, basically. So by October, November, that will be the end of it. Because now the process of planting has now stopped. because you know the rain patterns is like they start first in Equatorial, then Bahar Ghazal, then Upper Nile.
The Upper Nile is the last. So it's good news coming from wilderness scheme that people are still interested and they can make money. And that means their life is going to change in one way or another.
Hopefully.
Yes. And now you are not even half of the rehabilitation of the scheme. How long do you think it will take you to rehabilitate the whole scheme?
You know, when you talk about big, big infrastructure development, these things take years, 5 to 10 years. But we are doing it slowly and surely. So within the next 3 to 5 years, we want to be able to have the basics in terms of canals, the old canals, rehabilitating them, and also having reservoirs within the scheme that also the community can use as hafiz sometimes for their cattle. So it will, even the 11 million is not enough to rehabilitate the 11,000 fadan. That would be an enormous undertaking. But what we are hoping to do is that the small rehabilitation that we are doing will open up the scheme for investors who will now be interested to come, for progressive farmers, and also for us as
government,
local and international. And for us now, the government, we are able to address the issue of mechanization, which is good. That has been our contribution. We opened an agromechanical center within the scheme, and we provided tractors with full implements. And for us, this is a major plus that will even encourage more farming to take place.
They are not getting lost?
No, they are not. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
They are managed independently, because what we want to do is to, again, use this as a pilot and as a good example.
Mm-hmm.
As when we have the center, farmers will be able to get the service at affordable rate. And, you know, seeing is believing. Once they see it, I'm sure they will love it.
Yeah. Listeners to Radio Mirai, this is an interview with the Deputy Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, Honorable Lily Albino Cole, and we are discussing the programs that are being implemented by the ministry in the course of this year. And we have covered a lot of issues, including the wild rice scheme. Let's go now, before you come in. You can come in, and then we go to Upper Nile.
Yes, because now we were talking about all the projects.
Yes,
it's not the scheme alone.
Yeah, we left one.
We left because I talked to you about the projects that are, we do it through
jointly.
African Development Bank.
Mm.
Now we also have projects that we are doing with World Bank, and there are many of them, but I will focus on the major one, that is the RALP. We call it Resilient Agriculture Livelihoods Program. And RALP is in many states and in many counties. We have in Eastern Equatoria, we have in Taurit, Northern Bahar Ghazal, we have a Wil East and a Wil South, and also Djungle. There are three counties in Djungle, Timbor, and Twitch East, and Okobo, and just off my head, but we have, and also Western Bahar Ghazal in Wau. So it is spread out in the country across the needs. Again, through RALP and FAO, we are able to construct farmers' multipurpose centers within these counties that have solar, they have boreholes where they have water. They can also do some training and demonstration farms using irrigation from the boreholes, and most importantly, some small tools for farmers groups that they are able to use. But what's important is these farmers, once they are trained, they go out and multiply.
Yes,
and the
because
number of
people learn by seeing.
Yes,
because they cannot. We know South Sudanese. If you tell them theories and all
they
these,
will not,
they will never accept until they
unless
they see someone who is doing it, and they will join.
Yes, and their lives have been really changed recently. One of the women farmers got up and said, "I'm trained. I have learned enough. Now I want loans to start," which is brilliant.
Yeah, of course.
We want our people to stop this dependency syndrome on partners, on UN, so that they are able to stand on their own feet. And for this to come from a woman in the rural areas, we thought that was big.
She knows what it takes.
She knows what it takes. And it is part of the training that she has been receiving. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the Upper Nile area, an area that is considered to be potential, a very potential and a sure food basket for the whole country.
Yes.
And people say it's the only thing that they don't have a route connecting Upper Nile to consumption areas. And so what is happening exactly with the vast agricultural areas there? And you mentioned the Dura scheme.
Yeah, we have the Dura scheme in Rang. And, you know, the problem, well, the good news with Upper Nile is that even during Sudan, it has always been one of the major agricultural hubs in Sudan then. And a lot of focus was put on it. And there's a lot of infrastructure in Upper Nile. Even irrigated schemes, they are there, and then infrastructure is still there. And the farmers of in Upper Nile, you would be amazed to know that they are the most informed farmers in the entire of South Sudan. They know exactly what they are doing. They know exactly what they want. And the potential of the land is there. The problem of Upper Nile has been the logistics. You know, I mean, security is part of it, of course, but logistics is the biggest problem, transportation. Even now, with the allocation of this, when we are talking about mechanization, just to take the tractors to run is a huge logistical challenge. So that has been really the main problem that the farmers in Upper Nile are facing. But another problem that we are facing as a ministry is lack of funding. You know, when we talk about large-scale farmers, like what is happening in Upper Nile, the ministry cannot individually subsidize them. So what we were hoping to do is to have a very operational and functional agriculture bank that can come in, and now that will be able to fund and finance farming activities in Upper Nile and in many places in South Sudan.
Yeah, you mentioned the agricultural bank, and I wanted to see where are we now with that. Yeah.
You know, it is interesting, because normally the agriculture bank is part of the Ministry of Agriculture all over the world, and they implement the policies of the Ministry of Agriculture. But in terms of the other regulations and fiscal and monetary regulations, they are under Finance and Central Bank. When the Agriculture Bank of South Sudan, when it first, after secession, we had issues because it was then a branch of the Bank of Sudan back then. Then they had issues of capital, they had issues of licensing, of registration, and all those things were addressed and were taken care of. And we are supposed to have an agriculture bank that is functional and working. Unfortunately, we don't know in the process what happened. The Ministry of Agriculture had been maybe not intentionally, but has been overlooked when the act was written, and when the bank, the board of directors of the bank was formed. So now you have an agriculture bank where the Minister of Agriculture and Food Security is not a member of the board of directors, where the Ministry of Livestock and Fisheries is not represented. And, you know, because we formed the agriculture sector, these two ministries, and I mean livestock and fisheries, and also we have irrigation is part of us because of the irrigated schemes, and even environment and forestry. So now we are in the process of revising that. We are talking
the act
itself, and the management of the bank and the board of directors of the bank, because the bank is a very specialized bank. And the board of directors is also specialized in it, that it represents certain institutions that are stakeholders in the bank. the ministries I talk about, even trade will come in, yeah. Even finance will come
because
in.
Because the farmers would like to sell their commodities,
yes,
right?
Of course, yes.
And they would need roads.
We need roads,
feeder
yes,
roads feeder and all roads. This, yeah.
Yeah, so now we are in the process of revising that, and finance has agreed to sit with us because the recommendation was from them, forming the board of directors. So we are also looking at the act together with Parliament, especially our specialized committee, a committee on agriculture within Parliament, and hopefully we'll be able to resolve that soon, because that's the only way. And not only agriculture bank, cooperative bank.
Yeah, okay.
All these are specialized banks. They should really be doing what they are supposed to be doing to fund agriculture and agricultural activities within the country.
Honorable Lily, I understand even in the region here, like KCB and Equity,
yes, yeah.
They are supporting small farmers,
yes,
right? They
yes.
are supporting small farmers
and
with feasibility studies, and unfortunately not here.
Yeah.
And they're behind a lot of development, especially for the women groups and all this. Do you want also to engage these private sector banks?
We want and we should. You know, the biggest problem or the challenge that banks have is this issue of risk.
Yeah.
You know, it is risky, and agriculture is a very risky business, as you know. Floods can come one season, and
the shareholders
yes.
are not really giving.
They
the
are
money.
Not really. So it is. How do we come in as government to the risk, to take that risk from the banks, and so there's a guarantee, and to take it also from our farmers. So this is now. Even when we proposed to have the agriculture conference, this is one of the major areas that we were going to focus on is financing. Where do we find the middle ground, and how does the government come in so that now we can tell KCB Equity what we want to see you doing more with farmers, and especially women farmers,
yeah.
You know, because traditionally it's very difficult for them to get access to loans, and it's very difficult for them to have collateral. Because many women don't own land,
yeah.
they don't own houses.
Yeah, Honorable Minister, we have covered the climate change issues, but speaking about the resources for agriculture, there were kind of very small allocation given to the ministry, and we in the media have been calling for that thing to be addressed. How much are you getting now on paper, and how much are you getting actually?
I think the Minister of Agriculture and Food Security is not immune to all the challenges that we are facing as a government. And so when it comes to the challenges, the conflicts, the priorities, yes, the funding that we get is severely affected. So as a result, we have been unable to implement some of our major projects that have been approved by government because of that. But funding has delayed for some time, but hopefully with the call of His Excellency the President now and his directives to make agriculture a priority, we are hopeful that Ministry of Finance will engage us very seriously. And hopefully in the next fiscal year we will see a change. Yesterday there was a serious debate in Parliament. I'm sure you all of you were there, and the Parliament is also agreeing that it's high time for South Sudan now to implement the Malabo Declaration, which is now the Kampala Declaration, that at least allocating 10% of the budget to agricultural development. So for us, this is very, very, the political will is there.
And so, South Sudan is below the 10% target?
It is below the 10%.
How much exactly? 5, 6?
No, we haven't even, well, here, we have our budget as the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah, but allocation for agriculture.
But the 10%, no,
yeah.
We haven't reached, we haven't, not even 1%, not yet. Because what the Malabo Declaration is saying, that's all the African Union countries, is that at least 10% of the national budget should be allocated to agriculture.
Yeah, yeah. Another source of funding was the USAID supported programs. What is the effect and the impact of the withdrawal and suspension of USAID sector?
It has, you know, because US for some time now has stopped direct engagement with the government of South Sudan. So for us, the Minister of Agriculture, when they are funding projects, they always go through third party, mostly FAO or WFP in terms of humanitarian activities. So now the sudden abrupt of U.S. aid activities, yes, it has affected some agricultural projects that were implemented by FAO. Of course, it has a deep effect.
Mm. Do you have an idea where is the impact now, the effect?
The effect, of course, now we see when it's like scaling down sometimes some of the projects and stopping the projects altogether in some parts or in some counties in the rural areas. Yes. Mm. But hopefully with funding from African Development Bank and World Bank, that will offset that gap.
As we are coming to the last minutes, agriculture has been the traditional life engagement for many South Sudanese, 70% they say, together with cattle keeping.
Mm.
How much of innovation can we speak about for South Sudan, if not actual, but the prospects for innovation in the agricultural sector?
You know, what is good in South Sudan is that we have room. We have room to start everything and start it new and start it right. Agriculture in South Sudan cannot develop without innovation, without science, without technology, without research. And even issues of climate change. Now there's a lot of science and research involved. And simple thing, like now, I told you we have weather station now in not only in Northern Bahazal, we have one in Warap. It is like across the country.
What is the purpose of weather station?
Weather station is of okay. In simple terms, predicting weather, right?
Yeah.
So I know when the rainfall are coming.
Okay.
So that now we talk to farmers, we say, okay, you leave your traditional calendar and the world is changing. You know, now instead of farming this month, you farm this month. This is one of the technology that we hope we will be able to use and train and convince. You know, it's very difficult. And convince farmers that, okay, maybe there are some changes that now they have to do. So there is room for us to use a lot of innovation in agriculture. You know, we know now, even with livestock now, there are these pilot projects where you put the identification chip in the cattle for tracing, and also when there are conflicts and cattle rustling, it can help a lot. Ranches to avoid movement of cattle for long distances.
Zero grazing. So
yes.
These are all helpful ideas and improvements and innovations, Honorable Minister. With the high probability of rain this year, especially in September, what would be your message for the farmers across the country?
My message is to persevere, to continue farming, to listen, because, you know, an area that we fell short is the area of extension. You're supposed to be talking to farmers, sharing ideas, sharing new techniques, sharing new knowledge with them. Even climate change, we are supposed to be talking with farmers more, changing the varieties, testing new varieties that are climate resistant, all these things. But we fell short because of the obvious reasons. But we want to tell our farmers that as a government, we have taken agriculture very seriously, and as they persevere, we are also working very hard, and we will meet them somewhere, and hopefully things will be better.
Yeah, last message to the farmers in Upper Nile, because they were having last year problems with the pest control and lack of fuel and all this.
Yes, Upper Nile was hit hard last year. You know, Upper Nile, especially in terms of agricultural inputs, they depended a lot on Sudan. So the conflict, because of the proximity, and the conflict in Sudan has affected them a lot. That one is, and because of logistical problems that I talk about, it has also been difficult to take fuel on time for them. The issue of pest control has been a big problem. Last year we tried our best through DALCO, you know, the Desert Locust Organization of East Africa, to provide a plane and the chemicals. Things did not go as we planned. This year, in plant protection, we are starting early. and hopefully we will be able to address the issue, especially of killer birds in the region, because it is hit so hard up Nile and the other states along. It's like a belt.
Yeah.
So hopefully we will start early this season and avert any damage to the crops.
Honorable Deputy Minister of Agriculture and Food Security, Honorable Lily Albina Kong, thank you very much, and we appreciate your time for Radio Miraya. And of course, we will see you again with more developments in this sector, which is very, very vital for many of the listeners and very many of the farmers in this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.